Hi, everybody. I'm Beverly. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sick all week, and I have a terrible cough, but I'm so glad to be here. And I made a couple little notes today, just so that I could get started on the right foot. The word sanity in the second step, in the big book, it talks about soundness of mind. That's the description that's in the book. But over other AAs through all the years, always have said the same thing, and it's the simplest way to explain what insanity is. And it is doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. And that's the way it was. That was the way it was when I drank. This time I'm not going to get drunk. This time I'm not going to do what I sometimes do. But it never worked out. So in the first step, when I explained about how it was, I found out about the powerlessness and the unimaginability of my life. In the second step, the power greater than myself was a Catholic God who I was always in fear of. I feared him all my life because it's the way I heard it when I was taught about God. And, you know, being Catholic, you're supposed to go to confession. And I don't think I ever made a good confession in all the years that I went to confession. It was always the same thing. I either hollered at my mother or I hit my brother. And when I was married, I hollered at my husband or I hollered at my children. Just to get through the ritual of it, because there was no way I was going to tell anybody what was really going on inside of me, because I didn't know what was going on inside of me. And whatever feelings I had, I felt guilty about. You know, even long before I started drinking, I felt guilty about the way I felt about life. So, So getting past the first step into the second was, it was a transition. And, you know, I keep thinking back. It's been 42 years, and I keep thinking back. What are the highlights? What are the things that stand out in my life today that happened during that period that made me aware, that made me aware of a power greater than myself? And the first thing was an old friend named Jim White. Most of us in this room know him. My sponsor was, her home group was the 512 group, and it was on Thursday nights at that time. And so, of course, right from the very beginning, I went to that meeting every week. And Jim White was there one night. I was sober 10 days. And I remember saying at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I want to drink so bad. And Jim said to me, well, what you do is you stop what you're doing, you stare at the wall, and you count to 10 and peel an orange. And I thought, well, that's kind of dumb. But you know what? I did it. And I peeled the orange, or I counted to 10. I counted the bricks on the wall in front of me. And this reminds me of the bricks that were in the office that I sat in. And I counted the bricks on the wall, and I peeled an orange. And you know what? That compulsion to drink left, right for that moment, for that time. And that's when I began to see it's an hour at a time, a minute at a time. In the early days, that's what it is. It isn't a day at a time until we get older. And even at my age today, I'll tell you, if I don't apply the one day at a time and wait 24 hours, I always get myself in trouble. So that's how it started out with me, that I realized that something greater than myself was, I won't say restoring me to sanity, because I didn't understand that word. I knew that I was mentally ill. I knew that. I didn't know I was an alcoholic until the night I came to AA. But I knew I was mentally ill because of the way I thought, the way I, the things that I did when I knew that I shouldn't be doing them. I had no control whatsoever over my own life. So that was an opening for me to see that just by doing that, it took away the compulsion to drink. And you know, God was so merciful at that time that those things happened right away. You know, I didn't know that. I didn't consciously know that. But I was so willing to go to any length in the beginning because I was so afraid of the horrible life I'd been living and how it was all going to end up if I didn't do what my sponsor told me to do. And it didn't have anything to do with the higher power. I never called her my higher power, but I did rely on her totally for a long time. Because as I said the last time I talked, she was the first person that I ever met in my life that understood my pain. She understood what was going on inside of me. She understood all the bad things that I thought. And she never judged me for anything. Which reminds me, you know, I might get off the track a little bit here, but I heard something today from a girl that really made me sick. You know, as sponsors, we have a terrible responsibility to the girls that we sponsor. And the big thing is trust. We have to learn how to trust. And if you're going to share any part of your life with anyone, especially in the beginning when you're so embarrassed about your life, you don't want to share it with somebody that's ever going to share it with somebody else. And this just happened to a girl today, and she called me and she was very upset. Why would they do that? And I said, they shouldn't do that. You know, her sponsor passed on something that she told her sponsor to somebody else, and then that somebody else brought it to her. And she was humiliated. She asked me what she should do. And I don't tell anybody what to do in this program. I really don't. I let God tell you. You tell me, and that's getting it out of you. And then by thinking about it, you make your own decision. And I said to her, well, what you should do, absolutely, is confront her. Tell your sponsor what happened. And tell her that don't be mean or nasty about it. Just say, I'm humiliated. I don't understand why you did that. And then if she doesn't, if you feel that she's sorry, you know, maybe she won't even say she's sorry, but you know, the relationship you have between your sponsor and you is very, very, very important. And then you make a decision about what you want to do. You either find another sponsor, you have to, because if you don't trust, you can't keep that sponsor. You can't. I mean, I have so many things in my life. Most of what I share today has to do with the women that are in my life at the time that I'm going through something. You know, girls that I sponsor or the women that I know in my life if something's going on. And I don't have to pick up the phone and call my sponsor because I've got a lot of women in my life that understand. And I just tell them what's going on. Because I trust that they're not going to tell anybody else, or they're not going to make fun of me, or they're not going to tell me what to do. So in the second step, that orange was the beginning. You know, that was the beginning. And then I was told to get up in the morning and ask God to help you stay sober for the day. Well, like I told you, I never put God out of my life, but I was very afraid of him. And as I told you last week, or the last time I was here, I had one prayer that I would say. And if I was sober enough to remember it, because I was told as a child, if you say that prayer before you go to sleep at night and you die, you won't go to hell. So, you know, I had that prayer. That's the only thing I could tell you about God. That was the only time that there would be any relief for me. If I died and be said that prayer first. So I got up in the morning and I looked up at the ceiling and I said, please help me stay sober today. And I went to work and came home and did all the things that I had to do. And in the beginning it was very hard. It was very hard because my daughters and I had no relationship. I didn't know what I was going to do from the time I got out of work until it was time to go to a meeting. And um, And so every single day, it was like a ritual. You know, I'd come home from work, I'd fix dinner, we'd eat, I'd do the dishes, I would take care of whatever I'd have to take care of within the house, and go to a meeting. And after the meeting, I would go out and have coffee with the gang that I met at the meetings, and I was told to go home and be the mother your daughters deserve to have. So I didn't get into a coffee clutch in the beginning either. I might have told you that too. You know, some of this stuff I'm probably going to go over again because these two steps are so entwined. So asking for help in the morning and thanking him at night. And every morning, every day, every night, I have another day of sobriety. Another day. And then Kenny King, who also, he was Carol's good friend, whom eventually they got married, he would read to me out of step two, out of the 12 and 12. And I was reading over it today, and I made a couple of notes here. I can't say upon what occasion or upon what day I came to believe in a power greater than myself, but I certainly have that belief now. To acquire it, I had only to stop fighting and practice the rest of AA's program as enthusiastically as I could. Well, you know, I like that. That's true, you know, but I didn't know anything about the rest of the program. You know, I just knew that I was an alcoholic and that if I did certain things, I could live a life that I never knew possible. So that was what happened with me. I get up in the morning, ask for help, look at the ceiling, come home at night, thank him for a dead day. I did get into the big book. I was told to read, start at chapter 5. I would never tell anybody that today because it's the beginning of the book through chapter 5 that tells us. You know, I was looking at the big book today too, but I think I lost my place in it, and I'm not going to monkey around because most of it I'm sure I can... It's in the chapter, We the Agnostics, more about alcoholism and We the Agnostic. And I thought, wow, you know, I think there were a couple things in this chapter. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas didn't work, but the God idea did. And you know, going to meetings and hearing leads, hearing people talk about how they came to AA and what happened to them in their lives that they began to recognize God, I was just in awe of that. You know, I'd go to meetings and I'd listen to people and their stories and how they got to know God. And I guess I kind of looked forward to that. You know, I can remember my beginning days going to meetings every night. Saturday night was my hardest night because that's when I went to the Segerbund Club. And I don't know if anybody in this room is old enough to know where the Segerbund Club was, but Mary Jane might. I used to work with Mary Jane. In fact, once I got into my drinking and left my husband, I worked with Mary Jane and her and now husband Ray. And they were very good to me. They really were. They treated me like a human being. And inside of me was horrible, horrible guilt for what I had done. Left my husband for somebody else and tore my children apart from their husband and moved to the west side of Erie. And, you know, so thank you for that, Mary Jane. I always have good memories about you and Ray. I remember taking soup to Ray one time when he was sick. I made chicken noodle soup and took it over to him. I don't know how it tasted. God love him, you know. So at any rate, getting back to step two. So the days went on, you know. Asking for help in the morning and thanking him at night was such a simple thing, but I needed simple. I needed simple. I didn't know, even though I didn't know who I was talking to, I at least did what I was told to do. And that's the most important thing, is doing what we're told to do. Having the trust that the woman in my life who was my sponsor was never going to mislead me. And I had that. I can't tell you where it came from, but I know it was because of the willingness to change my life. And so that's what I did. Went to meetings. Let me see. I never looked at God as living in me. I always looked at God as up there. And today I can tell you that God lives in me and he works through me. And, you know, sometimes I've been sober a long time. And, you know, it doesn't matter how long we're sober. We're one drink away from a drunk. And these Joe and Charlie tapes, they are so wonderful. I recommend every one of you listen. At least listen to the tapes I have. Poor Kathy, she's going to be busy. Kathy's the one that gave me the tapes. And there's 10 CDs, and I passed 8 of them on so far, you know, to pass them on because they have so much wisdom from the big book that's in that in those tapes. And when they talk about that after 42 years, the growth is spiritual. It's the spiritual growth that occurs over time. That in the beginning, it's very, very simple because we're like small children. Everything that we learn is like learning it for the first time. And then as the years go by, we become open. And that's the only way I can explain it. We become open to change. And whatever little that might be, every single day, no matter how short of time we have, if we notice something in our life that's different, or something that happened, that how could that possibly happen? And then when you're talking to someone on a daily basis with some spiritual information, which is your sponsor, they explain, this is God working in our lives. And it's a very simple thing. He works in our lives. That's why we're here tonight. You know, we're here tonight, not because of us, that we're so great, because of him. Because we've done everything that we've been asked to do. And I also heard, you know, in the beginning it's suggestions. And then there's another word that Joe and Charlie say that I can't think of offhand now. It's not suggestions anymore. You're going to do it. You have to do it. And they don't make it that scary sounding, but I'm telling you, you have to do it if you want to stay sober. So, asking help every morning, thanking him every night, going to a meeting, listening to the people who are talking that share their experience, strength, and hope. Every day, you know, one day fell into another, 1 hour fell into another. I, you know, was told sometimes it's like 5 minutes at a time. And in the beginning, I did that. You know, I can remember, and again, I don't know if I told this story before, but I can remember my daughter was ill and she had to go to the doctors. And back then, I had no money. I mean, I had a good job, but I was so behind in everything because of my drinking that, I was ready to have my car taken away. And I was sober probably about 2 months, and I got a letter that they're gonna take my car. And I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? And what came into my head was call the bank. And so I called the bank, and I got the person who sent me the letter, and I asked him if I could please come and talk to him. And so that night, after I got out of work, I went to the bank. He let me in because the bank was closed. And I explained to them I'm an alcoholic and that I'm in AA and I'm working on changing my life. And please give me another chance with my car. And he did. And I drove that car around for a lot of years. You know, and I paid it. I started paying my bills on time and things changed. You know, things changed. But we have every area of our life we have to look at. We can't put anything aside, you know. We're small children, so it's, you know, it's a, and God knows that. So he's, you know, he makes things so easy for us. No matter how complicated our life, how complicated our job, if we live in the now, in the right now and ask for help, he's always there. He's there. That's it. So I had this, I had no money to take my daughter to the doctors, and I thought, well, I'm just going to have to tell them. I had to take her. She was Kathy, the oldest one. And I thought, I'll just tell them, I'll pay them. You know, I'll tell them I'm an alcoholic and I'm in AA and that I will pay them. And I started down the stairs of the apartment because I came home from work to pick her up and went back down the stairs, and the mail was there. And in the mail was an envelope, and it was a $15 insurance check that had been sent back to me. There was my money for the doctor. I mean, that is not unusual, that's not rare, that's not me. That's us. That's what he does for us. And all we have to do is stop and think about it. You know, having our minds run, you know, 50 miles an hour doesn't help. We've got to learn how to slow down, mentally slow down. And I have a hard time with that even today, the mentally slowing down. So, again, one of the things that I had a terrible, serious problem was sex. And in the beginning, coming to AA, once I sobered up, every time I'd see somebody I recognized, I thought, oh my God, I wonder if I was in bed with them. I wonder if I woke up in the morning and I was with them. One night I'm coming out of the Loblaws on 6th and by East Avenue, and this man came up to me and said, "Hi, Beth, how are you doing?" I was probably sober a couple of months again, and I thought, "Oh my God, where do I know him from?" Well, I knew him from the meetings. He was in AA, and so I was very happy about that. Very happy, very happy. So, then I think I told you about the going up, the fooling around with my dryer, Did I tell you that one? About the, you know, it would catch on fire, and I'd fool around with it, fix it, then put the clothes back in the dryer and keep going, and it would start on fire again, and I'd shut it down and fix it or do whatever I had to do to not make it. I didn't know what I was doing, but I had to get the clothes dried. So I'm going to the meeting that night, and the 512 group, of course, and they've moved it from Thursday to Saturday. And I have to be a greeter at the door. And the fire trucks are coming down Liberty Street. And I thought, oh my God, my dryer's on fire. What am I going to do? Do I turn around and go home? If I do, then my sponsor's going to be mad because I'm not there to be a greeter at the door. And all of a sudden, over the radio comes, there's a field fire at 2nd and Liberty. So that took care of that, and I'm very aware. I'm very aware that that was not just the radio station. And that's what I'm trying to tell all of you here tonight. Just be aware that the things that are going on in your life are spiritual. They're spiritual because this is a spiritual program. It's not a religion. It's, you know, like the big book says, your higher power can be anything you want it to be. And in the beginning, it was the orange. It was Jim White. It was my sponsor. It was leading, you know. And in those days, the early days of my sobriety, for I can't tell you how many years, 15 years maybe, every Sunday morning I was at Willow Run. And that is the best meeting there is. And my granddaughter came to the program 5 years ago, and that was the very first meeting I took her to. Even though I hadn't been there in a long time, it was circumstances. It wasn't that I didn't want to be there. It was just my life was different. But when she came to AA, that's where I took her. Because I knew there she was going to get positive things. I knew there weren't going to be any guys that are going to hit on her right in the beginning. And I trusted that group, and I still trust them today. And you have to be aware of all of that, too, because, you know, and it's just as much the women as the men, you know, men hitting on the women. And my sponsor took a guy right up against the wall one time and told him to leave me alone. And I've done that. I've done that. And to guys that bother my girls, not my daughters, but the girls I sponsor. Because you don't realize, I didn't realize that I didn't know how I was going to live without men when I first came to the program. And part of returning to sanity is realizing that sex wasn't what I thought it should be. It just gave me fear and guilt and remorse and shame. And so I was sober about 3 months when God again intervened. And at 2:00 in the morning, my doorbell was ringing. And I got out of bed and I thought, well, what's 20 minutes? Who's going to know? I didn't have the courage to, you know, to say, I can't do that anymore. But then as I'm walking to go down the stairs and I get to the door, something takes over and I say, I don't do that anymore. And I yelled it through the door and I walked back up the stairs, and I haven't had to do that in 42 years. And that is to sell my soul, you know, to sell my soul. So that was the beginning of dignity and self-respect right then, you know, right in the early, early days. And that's before I got into the third step, and we're going to talk about that next week. But, you know, I hope I've helped somebody here tonight, because it's really a hard step to except to tell you my experience with it. It's the only way that I can explain, you know, it's the sanity, the insanity is soundness of mind, as the book says, or doing the same thing over, expecting different results. And it's that simple. So I guess maybe in your questions, maybe I'll be able to tell you more, but as of right now, I can't think of anything, so I'll close. Okay, are there any questions?
Thank you, Beverly. Yeah, so now we'll open it up for comments in the form of questions, if you have any questions for Beverly.
Yes, Diane has one back there. She's another beauty.
Hi, Beverly. Diane Washi here.
Yes.
My wise sponsor in the early days told me that step two was hope. That and I say this to the women, and I'm sure you remember and have said it to many of the women you sponsor, but we are people who like to control everything in our lives. And you look around and where you're at when you first come in the program and how messed up your life is. And don't you want to have hope that it can get better?
Right.
And it can't be you, it can't be another human being, it has to be a power greater than yourself.
Right.
You have to believe.
Yep.
If you want hope that your life will get better.
Mm-hmm.
You remember saying those words to me?
Probably.
Yeah.
They were God's words, because I always say, please help me open up my heart and allow you to work through me. And so whatever is said between sponsor and the girl they sponsor is really words of God.
And I do believe step two is hope.
Yes, yeah. I agree.
It's a stepping stone into a better life.
Yes.
And I can't thank you enough for that. Thanks, Beth.
Okay, thank you, Diane. You know, one of the most powerful statements in the big book is no human power can relieve us, but God could and would if he was sought. I mean, that's wonderful. Come on, have some questions here.
Who's next?
Hi, Beverly. Thanks. That was very nice. It seems like a lot of people have a hard time, you know, believing in God or believing in God's power in this program, and that's a difficulty with this step. But the other difficulty I think I've seen and maybe had trouble with myself, I don't know, is believing I was insane or believing in my lifestyle before is insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I didn't lose my job. I mean, it was threatened. My license was threatened and stuff. lost my driver's license for a short period of time, but really was pretty well, I was still able to manage a lot of things in life, and had trouble being convinced that I was, that things were insane. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, do you have that difficulty with your sponsees, you know, that come to you saying, well, I don't think my life's insane, you know, I'm, mm-hmm. I like my life the way it is, yeah. you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And yet they've had some consequences that obviously brought them to you or to the rooms.
Yes.
And how do you help, I guess, convince them of the insanity?
Well, I thought I was insane because I thought I was going to end up in a mental institution, because what I thought of insanity was going crazy, which I thought I was doing. You know, blackouts were horrible, and I didn't remember, and I didn't blame that on drinking. I blamed that on something wrong with me, and so I just, when I came to the program and they talked about that word insanity, and that's when they told me, you know, it's the soundness of mind. It doesn't mean that you're going, you know, that you're going to end up in Warren State. There's something wrong with your mental, with your brain, you know, a mental disorder. Our disorder was alcoholism. And once we picked up a drink, then our brain did what it did for us to do the things that we shouldn't do. And so I define insanity much simpler than what I always thought insanity was. You know, like I said, back in the day, if you were insane, you were, you know, we've seen movies of women who were wild. They had their hair all over the place and they were screaming and yelling, and then we had women who stabbed people and killed them. And I shouldn't just say women, you know, and that was described to me as insane, and that's not what insane means. And so I think for the people today, where the word is much more simply defined, that again, doing the same thing over and expecting different results. And when you think about how many times have you said you're going to do this and you don't do it, because you pick up a drink and then whatever else was going to go on never did. And that's what the insanity is. That's what that means. And so that's what you could tell the person, that, you know, explain that to the person in your own words as to how it related to you. You know, if you said, like I always said on a Tuesday, I'm going to take my daughters because I'm feeling so guilty. I'm going to take my daughters to the movies and lunch on Saturday. And then Saturday comes and I'm drinking. So I'm not taking anybody to lunch and the movies. So that is, again, saying you're going to do something, but picking up a drink and getting different results. Because we have no control whatsoever. And maybe that's another good word, you know, for insanity. We have absolutely no control of our lives. And I hope that helped, Brian.
I can always talk. But I really liked what you said about mentally slowing down and realizing that the things that are going on in life are really all spiritual. I really like that concept, because when I'm not slowing my mind down, it's really all me. Yes. Me thinking stuff. Even thinking what I think God's thinking. You know, I mean, crazy. But what... let's see if I can ask this somehow, because I struggle with this. Like, some people struggle with God when they come in, and I do understand that. I myself was raised with no God, so it was easy for me to just, like, find a God, and I just based everything off the Bible, so it was the God in the Bible that I just went with, which happened to be what I believe is the God they're writing about. But what I have trouble with is I sought God out before I came in the program, so I was pretty strong in my belief with him. And I love how you said that, that, you know, you turn things over to him and he just works through these people in the rooms, and I just see him at work. But what I struggle with on the other side of the coin, I don't struggle with believing in God, having to think a table is God. To me, that I struggle with that. I struggle with a newcomer thinking they need a table, when I would really rather start someone, if I'm going to sponsor them, off with the idea of God as you understand him. Like you said, you understood him to be very punishing and, you know, very mean. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start there.
Yeah.
You know, yep. God as you understand him.
Yes.
Not pick something else.
Yep.
To replace him,
yeah.
But let's just go with, okay, if yeah. that's what you feel about him, you know, we'll take it from there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I'm thinking. But then again, I don't know how to approach these other women that will come in and would rather pick Buddha. And I mean, I'm just like, can't want to go there. So I just wondered if you run across that and how you handled that kind of a thing.
It's called let go and let God.
All right.
$14 a question and a two-word answer. Gotta love it. There you go. Quick one. What do you do with the people that you sponsor with who they want to debate everything with you? How do you handle them?
They debate everything with me? Well, let me see. I don't think I've ever found anybody that debates anything. I think I allow them their thinking. I allow them to feel the way they feel. And when they are debating me, and I don't have an answer right then, I will get back to them. You know, I'll do the search. I'll do the research. I'll get into the big book. I'll get into the 12 and 12. I'll get into the I don't know which book it is, because Bill sees it, where there's a description of everything in there. You know, maybe she's having maybe she's debating as to. The easiest thing for a young woman is, why do I have to let go of the men? Why do I have to let go of the men? Because that's what my sponsor said to me. No men. And of course she said the magical year. Well, it was 13 years for me. So, and I've had girls say to me, I would never be without a guy for 13 years. Well, that's up to you. That's on you. But I'll tell you what, every one of those girls that ever said that to me didn't stay sober. So, you know, you can't, debating with them doesn't work. And we allow them to debate, you know, because then you got to come up with something to explain to them why you feel the way you feel. And it is something that's, it's very well explained in the step books, the books that you read that talk about the steps. But it was very simply explained to me that you want a noose around their neck and you want to own their soul. And you don't know what love is and you have nothing to give. And to me, that was the most powerful thing anybody could have ever said to me. I didn't like it. Believe me, I didn't like it. I did not know how I was going to live without a guy in my life. Or how I was going to live without sex, because I had sex, like I said, all messed up. So that's what you know. I believed that, and that's what I tell the girls I sponsor. This is what was said to me. If you're concentrating on this relationship with this guy. And this is for the guys too and the girls. If you're concentrating on a relationship with another person, a loving relationship, boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, you're not concentrating on you. And every second of our lives that we have time to meditate or to think, we've got to be concentrating on ourselves. And that's not the ego. That's setting ourselves up for the third step, the fourth step, the fifth step. And we can't have any outside influences. If you come into the program and you have a husband, then you have to have a relationship with that husband. But then you got to believe that you came to AA with a husband because that's the way you were supposed to come to AA. You know, when we get here, we all come in different ways, but we got to believe once we're sober that this is the way we were meant to come to AA. And I worked through that. That was a real tough thing for me, a real tough thing. But as I've said early on, there were some wonderful men in my life who respected what I was and treated me as such, and never in one of those places was Willow Run on Sunday mornings. And just, they treated me like a human being, and I didn't have to play a role to get their attention. And I guess that's what I would say to the girls, you know. And that's the instance that I can think of, too, you know. Did that help? Okay. Are we done? Okay. That's a fast hour.